Today, how Joe Biden and Donald Trump are campaigning in a US election hit by the coronavirus pandemic.
Biggest night of the political year, and it was certainly a Super Tuesday for Joe Biden. No question about that. He rode a fast-breaking wave to score a primary comeback beyond any that has come before. The former vice president swept the South, surprised in the North, put himself back on top of this race. Yeah, take
a look at back at the beginning of March, life was good for Joe Biden. Despite a shaky start, he was pulling ahead in the race to become the Democratic Party's presidential nominee.
Those have been knocked down, counted out, left behind. This is your campaign!
Meanwhile, Donald Trump was also riding high. He'd recently been found not guilty in his impeachment trial and was celebrating huge job growth in February and unemployment at an almost record low.
Our economy is roaring. Jobs are booming. Opportunity is soaring. Poverty is plummeting. Crime is falling. And America is stronger today than ever before.
And then the coronavirus pandemic reached the U.S.
And we begin tonight with a disturbing milestone in this coronavirus pandemic. The death toll in this country surpassing 20,000.
Fears of a global economic crisis sent Wall Street on another wild ride today, ending its worst week since October 2008.
What might have been a bruising 2020 election campaign fought at rallies and events across America has now become a much more muted affair, taking place mostly online, and in Joe Biden's case, from his basement. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, campaigning in America's pandemic election. David Smith, you're The Guardian's Washington, D.C. bureau chief, and over the past few weeks, you've attended some of Donald Trump's daily press briefings, which have been making headlines all over the world. What are they like?
It has to be one of the strangest rooms in America, the press briefing room. Normally, it bustles like a railway terminal. Right now, because of the restrictions, only a limited number of journalists are allowed there each day. So it's more like a library. And then it's this bizarre part courtroom drama, part theater, part scientific briefing.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Trump quickly realized he could dominate these briefings and get huge TV coverage out of them. And indeed, he's repeatedly referenced his high ratings.
But even they said that the ratings are like Monday night football ratings and that these are like bachelor finale.
It's always very striking how little time he spends in the role of consoler in chief, as past presidents have done. He doesn't have much to say about the dead and the dying, almost as if he can wish the bad news away. But he does talk a lot about how great he's doing.
Did you know I was number one on Facebook? And I just found out I'm number one on Facebook. I thought that was very nice.
There are a lot of boasts.
Over 1 million Americans have now been tested, more than any other country.
Exaggerations, a lot of casting blame around on the Obama administration.
We started off with empty cupboards. The last administration left us nothing.
And the media.
The American people are looking for answers and they're looking for hope. And you're doing sensationalism.
A lot of pushing of miracle cures.
Let's see if it works. It might and it might not. I happen to feel good about it.
Which have turned out not to be so miraculous. And really what almost killed off the daily briefings was when Trump talked about injecting disinfectant into coronavirus patients.
See, the disinfectant, where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute.
To provide some kind of cleaning, as he put it, cleaning out the lungs.
Injection inside or almost a cleaning.
That really sealed what it was already being talked about, was Trump's campaign advisors and Republicans feeling that now these briefings were actually doing him more harm than good politically.
Trump is the campaigning president and he's held rallies nonstop throughout his term. And of course, the lockdown means he can't do that anymore. So what has he been doing instead?
Yeah, as one of my colleagues wrote, to understand Donald Trump, you really have to understand his campaign rallies. And that's right. He's been holding rallies even ever since he became president, which is unusual. He really thrives in those settings.
We believe in religious liberty, the right to free speech, and the right to keep and bear arms.
So I think he's feeling very cut off and deprived of that political oxygen. And I think that is why, for a month or so, he turned his daily coronavirus task force briefings into rallies of sorts. Now even those have faded away, is expanding a lot online. And the Trump campaign, I think pretty much every night, holds events on the internet, sometimes using Trump's song.
It would put Joe Biden in charge as vice president. He would assume the presidency, and he's so grossly incompetent, essentially, that that in and of itself would destroy America. Now
we'll continue to see a lot more of that.
This is some amazing material.
So while Trump is getting more airtime than ever during this pandemic, how are things going for Joe Biden? How is he able to campaign at the moment?
It's really hard for him to cut through.
Over the past 6 weeks, Joe Biden has been running his presidential campaign from his basement. The presumptive Democratic
nominee. Joe Biden's basement itself is becoming fairly familiar to TV viewers. There's some sets of white bookshelves with books in the background. You can see an American flag there. Sometimes it's a very striking contrast, and indeed the Trump campaign pushed this the other day. They issued a press release that on one side had Donald Trump sitting under the Lincoln Memorial, a giant statue of Abraham Lincoln in Washington.
We never had a more beautiful set than this, did we?
That's right.
Amazing.
Thanks for doing this.
Thank
this you. Is a little different.
And
than
then on the other side was Biden sitting cloistered in this basement with his personal effects.
Thank you so much for your time, sir. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for giving me the time.
Thank
so
you.
So they don't wonder where I am.
It's very hard for Joe Biden, you know, who's been involved in politics for half a century as a senator and vice president. And he is someone who really thrives in traditional campaigning, shaking hands, speaking to people face to face. He's said to be very good in that setting. All of that has been taken away. I think Biden's hope is that in the next 6 months, he can get out and about a bit more.
What sort of campaigning has Biden been able to do in this basement? Can you give us some examples?
In recent days, there's been some virtual fundraisers. And in the traditional model, these would be very exclusive events where guests pay often thousands of dollars just for a chance to be in the room, to get a few minutes with the candidate, to shake hands, to make their case, almost a status symbol of being there. And now those events are still operating, but online. So it's not quite as glamorous.
Not as many canapes.
Yeah, you log into Zoom. This has not gone very smoothly for the Biden campaign. On Thursday night, there was a different kind of event, a virtual rally in Florida. There were some computer glitches.
Introduce me. Am I on?
Yes, sir.
Hey, good evening, Tampa. Thanks so much for tuning in.
The image was wobbly sometimes. Some people talked about having a blank screen. Early in the campaign so far, there's also been some technical problems. Biden wondering, is he standing in the right place? Should he speak now?
I'm sorry this has been such a disjointed effort here because of the connections, but
his campaign really does need to get up to speed in the digital era, especially because the Trump campaign is so effective at that.
We know that on the campaign trail, Biden actually didn't do so well when he was interacting with people. And there are actually quite a few viral videos of him being combative with members of the public.
I was a Democratic caucus. You ever been to a caucus? No, you haven't. You're a line dog-faced pony soldier. You said you were, but you're...
So you're, is there an element honest, to which be being you. In the basement works in his favour?
It could do, yes. You'll hear different things on the campaign trail. And sure, the moments that go viral on the internet are when he loses his temper and says the wrong thing to somebody and seems to demean them. Actually, some of his supporters like that stuff. And I remember one moment that was supposedly a big gaffe where he was having a go at somebody at a factory.
Here he is actually swearing at a blue-collar factory worker in Michigan after being called out over his gun control plans.
And you are actively trying to diminish our Second Amendment right and take away our guns.
You're full of shit.
All right, thank you.
Now, shush.
Gosh. I noticed Biden's own campaign actually tweeted it out as evidence that he's a no-nonsense candidate who really cares. But at the same time, not being on the trail does provide some kind of shield for him, because there's also an argument that the 2020 presidential election is going to be a referendum on Donald Trump. So in a funny kind of way, the less we see and hear of Biden, the better it might be for him.
But rather than keeping his head down, Biden's been forced to defend himself in recent weeks against allegations of sexual assault being made against him by a woman who he worked with nearly 30 years ago. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, so a woman called Tara Reid. She was a staff assistant in Joe Biden's Senate office in 1992 to 93. She's come forward with allegations that Biden pinned her against a wall in the basement of an office on Capitol Hill, reached under her skirt and sexually assaulted her.
And I remember just my whole body shaking. And I remember knowing that I had made him angry and that my career was probably over. He was supposed to be a champion of women. And I was so thrilled to be at that office and so honored. And it shattered my life and changed the trajectory of my whole career in life.
Tara Reid had come forward last year and spoken out. She got very little media coverage at the time, but some reporters kept digging away at this. And in the last few weeks, the story has broken into the mainstream media. Biden has been forced to go on national TV, and he has fiercely denied these allegations, just flatly said, "This never happened."
Did you sexually assault Tara Reid?
No, it is not true. I'm saying unequivocally, it never, never happened. And it didn't. It never happened.
On Friday, there's a Tara Reid TV interview where she calls for him to stand down from the presidential race.
Please step forward and be held accountable. You should not be running on character for the president of the United States.
You want him to withdraw?
I wish he would. But he won't, but I wish he would. That's how I feel emotionally.
Of course, Donald Trump himself has faced multiple allegations of sexual assault, so is at risk of hypocrisy if he pushes this too hard. So the Trump campaign appear to be actually turning the hypocrisy argument against Joe Biden Democrats and trying to divide the Me Too movement and saying, look, in the past, Biden himself and other Democrats have said women should be believed and the time of trying to silence women is over.
What should happen is the woman should be given the benefit of the doubt and not be abused again by the system.
They say, well, why not apply that logic now to Tara Reid?
How much could this damage Biden's campaign?
It could be damaging. And a recent survey found only a third of people believe what he has to say on the matter. I think one problem for Biden may be that a hunt is on for documents about this allegation, a complaint that Tara Reid made at the time in the 1990s. So I do think there is some danger that come November, Republicans will still be demanding the release of those papers, just as they did Hillary Clinton's emails. But at the same time, I do think this is not a normal presidential year. The coronavirus pandemic and the economy will be front and center for the majority of voters.
After this, how the pandemic election has changed what both candidates are offering to voters. But first, we believe The Guardian's open journalism is incredibly important. It gives you facts, it searches for answers, and it always tries to give you hope. But right now, our advertising revenue and newspaper sales are falling faster than ever before, which means we need your support more than ever. If you value what you're listening to and what you read on our website, then please think about supporting us. It will help sustain us and keep our journalism open during this crisis and beyond. Go to gu.com/support podcasts. Thank you. So what you've outlined there, David, is huge challenges for both candidates. And clearly coronavirus is changing how they're reaching out to voters. But is it also changing what they're offering? What is Trump campaigning on at the moment?
Donald Trump's, I think, main argument now is that he will rebuild the economy.
We built the greatest economy in the world. I'll do it a second time.
To quote a line from his speech at the 2016 Republican National Convention, his pitch would be, I alone can fix it. And this time the thing that needs fixing is the virus and all the havoc it's wreaked. So I think he will point to his tax cuts, his deregulation. He will boast the economy was doing brilliantly before the pandemic, which certainly not everyone agrees with. And they point to some people having to work three jobs and really cavernous inequality and all the other problems there were. But even so, Trump will say, I had this great success. The medical experts told me I had to shut the country down, but now I can do it all over again. If that argument struggles and if the economy continues to struggle to November, I think you will also see him reverting to some of his default settings, some of the lines and policies he believes have served him well, most notably just that right-wing populist nativism and nationalism that's marked the Trump era.
The extreme fringes called us racists for imposing these critical life-saving measures. They wanted to let infected people pour into our country. I don't think they knew how bad it was, in all fairness.
We have a solemn duty to ensure these unemployed Americans regain their jobs and their livelihoods. Therefore, in order to protect American workers, I will be issuing a temporary suspension of immigration into the United States.
So I think we'll continue to hear a lot more of that, which certainly critics would say is trying to appeal to people's worst instincts and whip up all the xenophobia and racism that we saw in the 2016 campaign.
And on Monday, the president was accused of being racist after he clashed with an Asian American journalist at a White House briefing.
And maybe that's a question you should ask China.
What, sir, why are you saying that to me specifically?
I'm telling you, I'm not saying it specifically to anybody. I'm saying it to anybody that would ask a nasty question
like
that.
That's not a nasty question.
Please go ahead.
Why does it matter?
And blaming China has become a very familiar part of Donald Trump's rhetoric during this pandemic, hasn't it?
Yes, it would appear China is the new bogeyman. I remember at an early briefing, I asked him a question about, you know, why does he insist on calling it the Chinese virus? And even in his notes, which a photographer caught, you could see that he'd crossed out the word corona and replaced it with Chinese.
It comes from China. That's why. It comes from China. I want to be accurate.
And I think this is useful for Trump politically on various levels. It gets him off the hook over his own slow response if he can blame an external foe. It certainly satisfies China hawks in the Republican Party, who have long been saying that China is the existential threat to the United States in the 21st century. It is the rising global power. And then finally, this is also potentially effective for Trump as a way to bash Joe Biden.
I just will tell you that China would like to see sleepy Joe Biden. They would take this country for a ride like you've never seen before.
Even in the past few days, there have been more campaign ads arguing that when Biden was vice president to Barack Obama for 8 years, the US was way too soft on China and made trade deals that sent jobs from America to China. They see this as a potentially effective weapon in the presidential election.
And meanwhile, in his basement, what policies is Biden talking about?
I remember going to a Joe Biden campaign rally in Iowa. Feels like a lifetime ago. His main pitch, which I think is still the case, even from his basement, is that he will restore the soul of America, that the global pandemic and so many other issues really show the need for integrity and moral leadership and just sheer competence, and that as a career politician and a former vice president, he's the man to provide that, where Donald Trump has dismally failed.
Each and every one of us knows that deep in our bones that everything this nation stands for is at stake. And I really mean it. 4 more years of Donald Trump will fundamentally alter the character of this nation. And character is on the ballot.
Policy-wise, Biden will claim that he has the most radical policies yet seen by a president on the climate crisis, on reforming education, reforming healthcare, and so on. There are people on the left of the Democratic Party who would sniff and sneer at that and say, Biden is more or less the status quo, I mean, infinitely preferable to Trump, but nowhere near transformative enough as the moment demanded even before the virus and now especially in the virus era. But I think the fundamental argument, more than any individual policy, is the restoration of American values and humanity.
We're in a battle for the soul of the nation. And that's not hyperbole. We really believe that. And I think it's been demonstrated every single hour he remains as President of the United States. Each and every one of us knows that.
David, turning to the voters, right now the polls are looking good for Joe Biden.
President Trump's push to reopen the country comes as key polls find him trailing presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden.
Although we are still 6 months away from anyone casting their vote. Before we talk about voters in swing states, let's look at support for each candidate within their own parties. We know there's been a lot of soul searching in the past amongst those on the right about whether to back Donald Trump. But has the pandemic meant that more of them are falling in behind him?
I think his support is holding steady among his own party. The surveys still show strong Republican support for Trump. Certainly many of them will say, whatever we don't like about him, he's preferable to Joe Biden and any Democrat. And I think it also reflects how, sadly, day by day, this pandemic is going to be seen more and more through a partisan lens. So I think, sadly, even this crisis will become just yet one more example of the split-screen nation that we're living in.
And during the Democratic primaries, it was clear that the party was very divided between moderates like Biden and those on the left like Bernie Sanders. Has Biden made any progress in uniting these two wings of the party in recent weeks?
I think it's an uphill struggle there. The Tara Reid allegations against Biden certainly haven't helped. They've added a bit of fuel to skepticism over him. But ultimately, I think most Democrats will get on board. Unlike past elections, there's such a clear and present danger in Trump and the prospect of another 4 years of him that even Biden skeptics will ultimately feel that this is what they have to do.
Okay, so that's within the parties themselves. But a defining feature of US presidential elections seems to be the way that the race always comes down to a select few key demographics in crucial swing states, the voters who once voted for Obama and most recently voted for Trump. How are the candidates currently faring in these places and with these people?
Yes, I think it's always important to remember that this election is not decided by a popular vote. And most experts would say Joe Biden is certain to beat Trump in the popular vote, maybe by an even bigger margin, maybe 4 or 5 million, and he'll really run up a big score in states like New York and California. But all of that is irrelevant. In the Electoral College, it really does just come down to this handful of battleground states. Last time, really, by a margin of just over 77,000 votes in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, Trump gained the presidency. I mean, we're talking fractions of a percentage point here. And that means those three states are under close scrutiny again, along with Florida and maybe Arizona and some others. Right now, polling suggests Joe Biden is doing pretty well in those battleground states. And I think one of the theories always about his candidacy has been that he is stronger than Hillary Clinton there. Part of that, at least, is something to do with personality and identity. There were blue-collar voters, white working-class voters who, it is argued, disliked Hillary Clinton. The argument goes that Joe Biden does not have that same weakness. He seems to connect with working class voters.
My dad, who fell on hard times, always told me, though, champ, when you get knocked down, get up.
And that might partly be because of his style. He's seen as a little rough and ready, and those gaffes almost make him authentic. But equally, if not more important, again, in those battleground states, I think African-Americans. Again, there are some positive signs there in terms of what happened in the primary, where it was really African-American voters who sealed it for Biden in South Carolina and elsewhere.
I know Joe. We know Joe. But most importantly, Joe knows us.
That's right.
But whether he can energize them in quite the same way that America's first black president did remains to be seen. I'm sure Obama will be campaigning hard for him near the time if pandemic restrictions allow.
David, when do you think we'll see Trump and Biden back on the road again campaigning?
I have no idea. But I think Trump will be the first. You can tell he's itching to hold rallies again and get on the campaign trail. Biden will also possibly try to get out of his basement a bit more, maybe deliver some speeches. It'll still be tentative steps for both of them for now. But all this is very hard to predict, because if there's a major increase in virus infections again, then it'll be back to crisis mode.
Is this now the pandemic election?
It is a pandemic election. It's also an economy election. Everyone always says this is the most important presidential election of our lifetimes. But this time, perhaps there's more credence to that. You know, Donald Trump is a president like no other. He's upended so many norms, and he is seen by many as a danger to the fabric of American democracy and society. If he wins again, there are certainly those who feel, they say things like, this is the end of America, that the country and its institutions cannot survive 4 more years of Trump. I think what we also see with this election is a test of Trump's supposed invincibility. During the Trump presidency, Republicans have lost 42 seats in the House of Representatives. The Democrats gained control of that. Republicans have lost 10 governorships, more than 450 state legislative seats. When you look at the opinion polls as well, there really is a lot of evidence to question that maybe Trump is not this great magician, this great invincible political figure, and you only need a fairly competent candidate to take him on and actually beat him.
David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can read more of David's reporting from Washington, D.C. at theguardian.com and keep up with all the latest US news via the live blog. And The Guardian is launching a new podcast. All By Ourselves is a series about you and how your day-to-day life has been changed by the coronavirus pandemic. If you have a story to tell, big or small, please email all.by.ourselves@theguardian.com. Today's episode was produced by Courtney Youssef, and the sound design was by Axel Kakutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back with you tomorrow.